fishless ponds, the red squares. It is about half a reduction, so there's about half as many mosquitoes in a fish pond as there are in a fishless pond. We didn't find a difference between the vegetation patterns, but we did find a difference between the vegetation plot sizes. So in this plot, the green triangles are the smallest plot size, those blue squares are the medium, and the red diamonds are the largest. And we found that the middle plot size had significantly more mosquitoes than the smallest plot size. However, neither of those is significantly different from the largest plot size, which is a little bit of a curious conundrum when you're trying to figure out what exactly is going on. As we did go through the system, we did look at all the other invertebrates, and most of the major other invertebrates that are sampled in these ponds are large dragonflies, echinids, and libellulids. We also have mayflies in here and a lot of chironomids. However, we didn't see any significant difference between fish and fishless ponds, even in the total numbers when we're going through. So future work that is going to be done is we are going through and trying to see whether there actually is complete control of the mosquitoes as we move through the summer growing season and more culex are being laid and breeding out of these ponds. We also have the goal of releasing Gila into a natural wetlands after this. This is the Prado wetlands on the Santa Ana River. And these wetlands are currently being restored. They were washed out in the mudslides of 2005, and we're looking forward to the Orange County Water District taking Gila off of our hands and putting them into their wetlands. There are, of course, many people to thank for this. Mostly the funding sources are very important, the UC Mosquito Research Program, the Department of Entomology, and the Pacific Branch for bringing me to this meeting. Lots of folks who helped me dig up all those plants, and to especially the undergrads, Peter, Janelle, and Jonathan. They spent many hours sitting in front of the microscope looking through all those samples and trying to figure out what those bugs were. And with that, I know I have plenty of time for questions.
Yes. There are plenty of time for questions.
Steve.
Are your fish large enough that they can take something like a dragonfly nymph as a prey item?
Are the fish large enough to take... Right, so the question is, are the fish large enough to take actually a dragonfly out? They would probably take the smallest ones out. So the fish seem to range from, you know, absolutely nothing to the largest ones that we picked out. We just picked out our fish. They're about 5 inches long. And their mouth probably isn't big enough to pick up the largest echinids, but they would be able to pick up some of the smaller ones. So there should be a good interaction going on between those, and hopefully we can tease that out between the fish and fishless ponds. Yes. Right. So the question is, what were the species of mosquitoes that were there? Primarily, we have Culex tarsalis in these ponds. There are a few quinks, and that we also have a few stigmatosoma. But it's primarily Culex. I think I have like one Anopheles that I've picked up ever out of those ponds. Was there a preference between, you know, what we found? We mostly found some smaller, the second and third instar Culex for the most part. I've picked up a few pupae, but it's been very small. And whether that's actually coming from control or not, remains to be seen. So, yes, not, sorry, behind you, he raced first. Yes.
Why do you think that is?
Why do I think there's a difference between small and medium plot size? I think that we're actually getting the other part of the story is that there's been some frogs that have moved into the ponds as well, they didn't move in until April. So I'm thinking that they may have had an interaction with the fish and with the dragonflies. We did see more dragonflies in both the medium and the largest plot sizes, but not the small plot sizes, and I think they have may have had another impact on having an actual another predator in there as well. Larger amounts of the mosquito larvae to be in the medium plot sizes? Yes, so in our studies that David did, there were more mosquitoes in any type of plot size. He had 1 meter bands and 20 meter bands and small bands, and as long as there were a sufficient amount of vegetation in there. It seemed there were more mosquitoes that liked to breed in there. It just gave them more protection from predators that were swimming around. In the
just
back.
One more quick question.
Last one.
Where
did we get the fish to do the studies? That's a good question. I unfortunately don't know that. By the time I got there, we already had a stocking pond going. But Bill Walton is here somewhere. He may not be here this morning. You can ask Bill. He's sitting across. There you go. I knew about the permits. I just didn't know where they came from. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Transmission occurs primarily during the summer months. So, the aims of this study were to determine the best age group to calculate incidence rates. And what I mean by best is, what is the most useful age group? Where can we get the data? All of that was taken into account. Determine the best geographical scale to calculate incidence rates, and determine the best geographical scale for cluster analysis. So everyone's versions of best are different. This is just trying to be the most useful for everyone. So traditional incidence rates for lacrosse vary by populations used. Some people are using populations under 15, 18 and under, and total populations. Now I picked out two of the better ones, West Virginia, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, and you can see the difference between using under 15 and the total population and what you're going to get at the county level. Now, that leaves me wondering, and probably everyone else in the room, so does the county level give an accurate estimate of true incidence? So why is that? What are we talking about here? Well, these larger geographic scales like the county, they're going to distort your incidence rates, especially with these focal diseases when you have a small number of cases, because the population is going to overwhelm the smaller number of cases. We're probably going to miss disease clustering. So why does everyone use these for reporting? That's the way they've always done it. Really, it's ease of use. Everyone knows what a county is, for one thing, so everyone can interpret the results, and the census data is easily available, but it may not be the best way. So what I looked at was 74 cases of lacrosse during a 10-year time period in eastern Tennessee. For the county level, we looked at 18 contiguous counties, and the census tract, we looked at 230 contiguous counties. We used a global Morin's eye for our global statistic, and for our local statistic, we used LISA, or a local Morin's eye. And this was all plugged into GeoDaw, which is a free software program. So the incidence comparisons at the county level, now this is the total population. All counties put together, and you can see the median and the mean. Now when you just look at the counties with cases and include those populations, it jumps up a little bit, and you notice this starts happening as we look at the population 18 and under, and for all counties and 18 under in cases, you start to see it's starting to move up, and you're starting to see differences. And finally, when you get down to 15 and under for all counties and 15 and under for just cases, it's moved up and is more within what we're seeing reported elsewhere, West Virginia, Minnesota, Wisconsin. So, but when you look at the county spatial analysis at the geographic level, it's not significant. You can't detect any significant clustering with a global statistic, which is what we would expect. So you need to take it down to the next level. Now when we look at the incidence comparisons at the census tract level, start looking at these numbers and start working your way down the screen and look at the range of cases that we should have incidence per 100,000. So when you're using the total population for all census tracts and the total population for cases, it's about the same as what we were seeing before when we're using the counties. But then when you move to the population 18 and under, for all census tracts and those with cases, it jumps up significantly. And finally, when you're using the population 15 and under all census tracts and 15 and under with just those with cases, you see a pretty dramatic increase. And notice the ranges of the cases we're detecting in these census tracts. So from this, incidence rate should really be looked at the census tract level instead of the counties to give a more accurate representation of these focal arboviral diseases. Then when we performed the spatial analysis for cluster detection at the census tract level, we had highly significant results at the global Morens I value. And you can see this was for using total population within census tracts, population 18 and under, population 15 and under. Then when we looked at the local clustering, we also had highly significant results at all three levels. These were all run at 9,999 permutations. So, this is the best example visually to explain what is going on. When you use a total population at the census tract level, we have five clusters detected, which are these bright red groups. But when you look at the population 18 and under, we found eight clusters detected, which are these bright red groups. Another interesting finding was there was no difference between using the population 18 and under and 15 and under for cluster detection, which for ease of use probably be best to use 18 and under. So in summary, we found that it's best to use, for ease of use and all of the other factors, 18 and under for calculating incidence rate to give a better true estimate of what the incidence of disease is. And the geographic scale we recommend is this at the census tract level for both the calculation of incidence rates and cluster analysis. I know this seems like a lot more work, but with our computer technology today and ease of data, really we should be looking at the census tract level for probably almost all diseases instead of reporting them at the higher level. Now we just have to try to figure out ways to better represent these data to the public and the public health officials so that they can use them. So what I'm hoping from this is we will start to have a more standardized method of incidence reporting for La Crosse. I've gone back through all the literature and it's going all over the place. Really, we need to have a standardization so that we can make these comparisons historically for all diseases as well. These methods will provide a more accurate assessment of virus transmission in these focal areas that we are missing currently. It's going undetected in many places, and we hear about, 10 cases per 100,000. Well, that might be what you hear for the county, but you go to the far northern part of the county in one census tract and you've got 600 cases of incidence per 100,000 that you would expect in that census tract, very focal center that would just be missed. So ultimately what I'm hoping is this information will help provide public health officials the ability to have more targeted interventions with their limited budgets. Instead of spreading everything around the entire county, they can focus on those areas which are most needing attention, and try to figure out what interventions are best. And I hopefully have time for questions. So I think I...
There are time for questions.
Can you explain to me how census tracts are consistent over the last six censuses?
And that's another problem that we run into. They do move around. And what I think probably is the best way is to ultimately, so you would have your county and then you would overlay using ArcGIS software, basically GIS software, the older census tracts, and you can start to have a location. The boundaries aren't going to vary that much. They may move a little bit. Mainly we're talking about more population differences, especially since the population is continuing to increase. Very focal disease. Traditionally, it's associated with tree hole mosquitoes, Aclarotatus triceridus, in the upper Midwest. But we're also finding it in other areas where you have tires, any water-holding containers. but it's still associated with hardwood forest. So at the smaller level, you're detecting these little groups of hardwood forest. Where we saw these clusters, the actual true clusters, were in more rural areas of eastern Tennessee, where we still had those clusters of hardwood forest, where people had maybe moved into these rural areas and moved into areas where disease transmission is going on.
So have you made associations?
That's what I'm working on right now, and so that'll probably be the next talk.
For those of you who stuck around to hear my talk. So I'm going to kind of bypass this slide and start to talk a little bit about the tree hole food web.